Well, I think good afternoon, everyone. A very difficult act to follow. I'm full of admiration for what Heather's done and how she's explained that to us, and it's a great pleasure and honour to hear that. Thank you. And particularly because my father-in-law died at the age of 95 suffering from acute memory loss, and he was Swiss. And so I'm very pleased that the Swiss government has actually put some money towards that. That's great. Well, my contribution is going to be quite different, really, from the point of view of a funder, as you might imagine, and various of you have suffered at my hands in various capacities as managers, trustees of registered charities and other organisations locally. What I'm going to do is talk about the considerations that funders typically sort of take into account when they're making grants, and in particular reference, so if you can sort of see the process and the sort of mind pattern that funders go through, then one can see where research, the product of research, the need for research fits into that, really. So that's the way in which I'm going to sort of address it, really. So my background in coming to as a funder is that I was chief executive of a commissioning health authority in Norfolk from 1989 to 2003. I was chief executive of historic endowed grant-making charities of Norwich for about 13 years until 2016. And I'm still chair of the Norwich and District Funders Forum, which is an informal grouping of about 15 of the principal grant-making charities in Norfolk, whether they're registered charities or family trusts. And we get together four times a year. And the objective of that is to share intelligence and to try and make things happen, really, in concert with organisations that come to us seeking funds to achieve specific objectives. So, of course, funders in the voluntary sector have very different objectives, which is quite important to understand if you're approaching them, really. A fundamental difference exists, obviously, between registered charities and family trusts. The members of the Funders Forum are a mixture of those two types of bodies. The registered charities are obviously governed by statute law and regulated by the Charity Commission, and they must work to meet one or more of the statutory purposes set out in law and provide public benefit, clear public benefit. Trustees have individual and collective responsibility to ensure that charitable funds are used effectively. And obviously there is a sort of major point of tangent with research evidence and research findings. You know, what is effective, what is provenly effective, what is the standard of evidence that is needed to judge effectiveness. And trustees, therefore, have quite a very difficult task, in my opinion. I mean, particularly in grant-making organisations, because they're faced with a wide range of organisations who are seeking funds for a wide range of different activities. And I think it's true of commissioners, of funders generally. It's very difficult to sort of keep up with the evidence, and to know where it is and how to understand it and how to interpret it and apply it in the particular circumstances that come in front of you. Clearly, funders typically and commissioners are fundamentally always faced with people on the other side of the table, if you look at it in that way, I don't particularly, who know more about what they're providing, clearly, and goodness, they should do, than the commissioners do. And it's a continuing difficulty inherent in commissioning, I think, particularly in, say, health services, which I was involved in for a good few years, to be able to keep up with the rate of change of technology and the difficulty that poses for effectiveness and certainly cost effectiveness as well. So registered charities and trustees of registered charities have that fundamental responsibility, which is very difficult for them to discharge, really. And therefore, unless the trustees themselves have that knowledge and understanding, come from that professional background, perhaps, they rely on their officers and their staff to advise them about that, or obviously to bring in impartial experts to talk about particular issues so that they're better informed. But, of course, particularly if you're dealing with smaller grant-making charities, smaller funders, they just don't have the resources. Well, they do have the resources, but they don't have the propensity to spend those resources on staffing. They obviously are there to try and make a difference for the beneficiaries of the charity. And very often trustees will see that very limited funds should be spent on management and understanding research and being able to have an effective dialogue with applicants. They would rather spend the money on the direct benefit for beneficiaries. And so there is a contradiction there. I mean, Brian raised the point about whether funders ought to know more about what they're funding. Well, I would say, yes, I agree with that. But, you know, how much money should trustees actually spend on staffing which would enable them to have that information and to garner that information and to interpret it and present it to the trustees rather than on direct benefit to beneficiaries? That's an inherent problem in most organisations, management versus direct benefit, really. So I think what the two types of bodies, the family trusts and the registered charities, have in common is that they obviously want to use their money to make a difference. I think that's how one would sort of characterise the purpose of grant-making charities, I think. So two questions they have to ask, really. What is the need for any particular for any particular case that is put to them? And the evidence of need here is crucial. And this can either come from official statistical resources or from sources in local communities. Statistical evidence might be from national sources, but deemed to be relevant in local settings. For example, the effect of poverty on educational attainment and educational progress, really. And, of course, this is very relevant to local charities because Norwich, Norfolk, has very mixed educational attainment and progress and, you know, is particularly poor in deprived communities. The second issue, really, is that funders have to ask is what is the priority? Because, obviously, they're faced with more demands for funds than they have resources available, typically. And so this might be seen exclusively as the province of the funder to make that decision about priorities between competing applications. But I do believe that there is a place for funders to influence those decisions, really. One will talk about the greatest need. At the end of the day, it's probably a value judgment. Personally, I always thought that it was more important to try to invest funds in projects which had a preventative element, which would actually intervene at an early stage in any sort of process, for example, in a child's education, you know, right from conception almost, or before conception. An intervention at that point was much more important in the long term, both for the individual and for the state, than an intervention much later, really. So Norwich Charitable Trusts, which I was the chief executive, adopted a policy whereby it used its grants for individuals to help people out of the river if they were seen metaphorically drifting down the river and in danger of drowning. We got them to the bank, hopefully, by giving them individual grants, but we also invested in preventative work in registered charities, particularly to help people fall to avoid falling in the river in the first place. That was a public sort of health analogy that we used in terms of prevention and minimising impact, really. So the fundamental question is, how can a funder satisfy themselves that a grant will make a difference? Well, one can look at this in two ways, I think, really. Firstly, what type of objectives do funders want to support? Well, I've mentioned, of course, the obvious one, which is direct benefit to beneficiaries. The second one, I think, is promoting sustainability in organisations, and that's particularly difficult for charities at the moment in such a difficult funding environment. And linked to that, organisational development. I think a good example of that would be Norwich Community Law Service, where over a period of years, Norwich Consolidated Charities made grants to them to help them to develop as an organisation to a point where they became credible for funding from national organisations, including from central government. And so that's something which I think we, working with them, managed to achieve. Another area which I think funders are interested in, but perhaps less so, is quality improvement, developing standards and assessing quality standards. And I think part of the research that organisations should be doing, if they could, and I think funders have a role to play in funding some of this activity, as Brian has alluded to in his introduction, is assessing, gathering information and processing information about how the users of service feel that the services are relevant and provide what they need, or whether they could be provided in a more appropriate and effective way. Research into effectiveness and cost effectiveness, I think, for local charities, local grant making charities, will come relatively low down the agenda. I think it's a pity about that. I think that the other considerations that I put spoken about just now come higher in trustees' estimation of priorities of how funds should be used than funding research. However, I think that perhaps one of the things that ought to happen is that there ought to be a meeting perhaps between RVAC members locally and some of the local trustees of local charities, perhaps some sort of joint workshop where that lack of priority might be addressed, really. Secondly, how do funders know the grant will have a desired effect? Well, this is where research evidence comes in a big way, really. And, of course, as I've said, if there is high level of research, then, well, research will vary from background information and expert opinion to systematic reviews. And the standard of evidence, obviously, is an important issue. But again, I think grant-making charities may need help in addressing how to use that evidence, really. They won't always have the skills to know about that. They will tend to rely upon background information and expert opinion locally, and that will be the major influence, I think, on assessing whether a certain intervention is likely to be effective. So the other thing I think to point out is that the Charity Commission recently, for registered charities particular, now puts much more emphasis on impact and requires grant-making charities to set out in their annual reports what impact their work has actually had. And clearly they now have to think much more carefully with those whom they've funded how they can demonstrate this. So here is an opportunity for much more systematic and partnership approach to considering that issue. So finally, I think the general lessons that can be drawn from this, really. Well, in my view, where research comes in is in the area of assessing need and understanding that need, assessing the priority of that need, assessing whether certain interventions will have the desired impact, and also in assessing and trying to improve consistently the quality of the delivery of services, both in terms of appropriateness and quality of process of delivery. I think that most funders will want information prospectively and certainly after the project on the impact of funding, the impact the funding has had. This will obviously be more important the greater the size of the grant, or if the grant is to be repeated over a number of years. I don't think, generally speaking, the evidence of impact for local grant-making charities needs to be that complex, really. It is likely more to be based on personal reflections of individual beneficiaries, which are gathered together and analysed. Most funders realise in the field, in the social field, it's not possible to carry out randomised control trials. It might be about perceived effectiveness. Equally important will be the quality of service provided. Funders, I think, are likely to look more favourably on applications which spring from communities themselves rather than from organisations, particularly national organisations, who appear in Norfolk and are trying to apply a template to the local situation without really knowing what the local circumstances are. I think that the key, I think, to the relationship between service providers and local grant-making trusts is, and this is where trust is fundamental, it's establishing longer-term relationships between individuals very often, and certainly between trustees of the different organisations, who get to know each other and appreciate what the need is locally, have ongoing conversations about that, learn about how that need is evolving and what each of the charities is doing to try to address that, and to work in longer term partnerships, which is underpinned by longer term funding. So, thank you very much.